May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be free from harm. May all beings love life. May all beings awaken. Welcome to another Cuke Audio podcast. We have a guest today. I pray that you and yours are safe and comfortable, free from economic hardship, and able to get out and do whatever it is you want within the limitations of the universal precept of do as little harm as possible. So today's guest is Tony Patchell, who came to Zen Center with his wife, Darlene, although I don't know if they were married at the time, in 1969. And they founded the Guerneville Zendo in Guerneville, north of San Francisco, sort of the Haight-Ashbury of Sonoma County. And it's pretty cool town. It's in West Sonoma. And anyway, so we had a nice talk with each other. And so, look, we'll just get started with that right away as soon as we've had our pause to meditate. I didn't get the first few minutes. For some reason, my MP3 for Skype wasn't recording. I don't know why. I don't know why it's not recording. But I do a backup. I use Call Note, so Call Note got it. But I didn't turn the Call Note on until we'd been talking for about 45 seconds, I imagine. So you just miss us saying hello. And I cut out the first 15 minutes or so of us talking because we just caught up, you know. And we talked. There were some interesting things, like he talked about how he'd just become a new grandfather. And I said, oh, really? And he and Darlene had one son, Ethan. So I said, oh, really? He said, yeah, she's 28 years old. They just discovered that Ethan was the father through DNA. Weren't sure. And he said she's wonderful. He loves her. He said she's wise and kind and good. And he just thinks she's great. And Ethan and she have gotten really close, and they'll come out and stay with him in the Zendo because they're not having any Zazen because of COVID. So his group, you know, has some communication with each other, but they're not doing any Zoom or anything. So it's a little sad. It's a COVID, the Guerneville Zendo has been downgraded by COVID, but the individuals are all thriving. So I said to Tony, wow, how many grandchildren do you have? He said, four. I said, how many are like this? He said, three. Ethan was very active when he was very young. He was very close with my son, Kelly. Anyway, so that's the main thing I remember that we talked about earlier. Oh, yeah, I'll tell you one other thing. He said that she had not gotten vaccinated, and like a lot of young people do, and that she got extremely ill, and they were quite afraid, and it took her 3 weeks to recover. And I said, oh, that's a lot like what happened to my son, Kelly, who's 48. And in excellent health and takes all the right things to have a good immune system. But Tony said, yeah, COVID doesn't pay any attention to any of that. But then you never know, you know, somebody who's not in very good shape will get it and have just very light symptoms or none. So it's really random. It's hard to tell. But He said, well, when you get to be older, he's 81, he said, it's definitely more dangerous. All right, so that's the sort of thing you missed. And I think I missed it. Maybe I left some of that on and you'll have to hear it again. So listen, when you hear the bell, if you have such a mind, hit pause and meditate or whatever for as long as you want. And when you're through, hit unpause. And we'll all finish meditating at the same time and hit the bell to end the meditation and get right into a phone chat with our guest, Tony Patchell. Tony, how did you get involved in this Zen thing?
Oh, my God, David. Where do you start?
Where does it start?
Well, I could say it started with me when I was 6 years old and I saw my little puppy hit by a car. And there, for the first time in my life, I encountered death and depression. Or I could say the first time I took acid.
Yeah.
And actually, I mean, right away, bang, I became a... that was in June in 1965, and I became a spiritual hippie. You know, there were different kind of hippies.
Right.
I was living in the... Yeah, I was living in the hate and going to state, and I'd been living there for a couple of years before.
Really?
Hippies.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I was early on in the hate. And but that was it. That was I became a seeker and looking and taking lots of drugs. I thought drugs were the answer.
Well, when you say drugs, what do you mean?
Psychedelics.
Mhm.
I avoided heroin like crazy. I had no idea. I mean, I had no intention of going near that stuff. In fact, once I was walking down Haight Street in those years, about 1966 or so, and this woman's voice, she came right up behind me and said into my ear, "Don't use needles." And I turned around and there was nobody there.
Hey, that's good, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
I never used needles. I was not it. I never liked opiates or downers. Methadrine speed was a bigger problem in the hate, but that really got bad more like starting in 67 or something, as I remember.
Right. You're right, or 68, maybe.
Yeah, 68.
Yeah.
68.
Yeah.
That's a really... It does more physical damage than the opiates, like heroin or morphine. They sort of preserve you.
I worked with speed freaks for years, and it was just terrible what it did to people.
Oh.
I mean, I would watch them, their teeth fall out, the skeletal.
Yeah.
Terrible. Terrible.
You
anyway.
Go on.
Anyway, back to Zen. By 1969, I was pretty much burned out and frustrated, but I was doing okay. I was sharing a nice house in Marin with a friend, and I was sort of working part-time construction and making decent money, but I was bored. And so a friend of mine who had been a combat Marine in Vietnam came back, and he was bored. He was also, in retrospect, I realized, a sociopath and a killer.
Pardon me.
Yeah. He saw 13 months of solid combat. He was a caisson. Anyway, he and I decided that we would leave Marin County and go back east and sell some drugs.
And so you mean, all right, now, sell what?
Marijuana. We got a couple of pounds of really good weed. We had about 200 or 300 capsules of good acid, and we had a pound of mescaline powder.
Yeah. And wow, that's quite a bit.
Yeah, we managed to accumulate all this and stuff the doors. He had this great big red Land Rover. Remember them? They looked military vehicles.
Yeah.
He had this big one. So and he always carried a gun. He always had a little .32 Browning stuck in his boot. And we decided that we would go back east and sell these drugs. I mean, I can't believe how crazy this was in retrospect. That two long-haired hippies carrying guns, driving in this big red Land Rover across the United States in 1969. But we did. But the first bad thing that happened was we pulled into a gas station in, I'm leading up to my Zen experience here.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, the first thing that happened, we pull into a gas station in Missouri about 3 in the morning, and there's three guys sitting out, you know, on chairs in front of the office smoking cigarettes. And when we got out of the Land Rover, they whistled and said, "Hey, girls." And my friend Joe walked over to them and just hauled off and kicked the middle guy right under the chin and knocked him out of his chair. And that shut them up.
Wow.
I went, "Oh my God." So then he's from near Pittsburgh. So then we go to Pittsburgh where they had a little bitty tiny Haight-Ashbury about two blocks long next to the UPitt campus. And he grabs some of the drugs and goes up on the street and he's going to sell it. So the guy he approaches is a narc.
Oh.
So he beat up the narc and knocked him unconscious and comes running back to where we're staying and says, we got to go. So we drive about, I don't know, 7,500 miles into the middle of Pennsylvania where we stay in a trailer back in the woods with a Vietnam friend of his to sort of wait to figure out what to do next. And we stayed there about a week, driving me crazy, these guys telling combat stories, and I'm trapped in this trailer in the middle of the woods. So then we get in touch with a friend of ours in Canada, and he says, "Why don't I meet you at Niagara Falls, and I'll buy your dope." So we drive up to Niagara Falls. We park in the Border Patrol parking lot so we can see the bridge across the river. And, of course, this is a dope deal. The other guy is late and late and late. And finally he shows up and buys the dope. And we go back to Pittsburgh, and I decide I've had enough of this trip. And I grabbed a Greyhound bus and went to Cambridge and stayed with friends. So then
where,
I'm in Cambridge.
Where are you from?
Here I am.
Yeah.
Originally, southwestern Ohio, down by the near the Ohio River.
All right.
I grew up on a 19th century farm.
Wow.
Anyway, so I'm in Cambridge, and I have hardly any money and no drugs and kind of drug addled and not knowing what to do with my life. And I started hanging out at this coffee shop right off of Harvard Square. It was down in the basement. And I became sort of a regular there in the afternoon. And I would sit at the employees' table. And this is in October of 1969. And I sit down there one day, and then there's this book on the table, The Three Pillars of Zen, by Philip Kaplow. One of the guys who worked there was a Zen student, the first Zen student I'd ever met. And I opened the book, and what had confused me about Zen in the past was no, I would read Alan Watts and whomever, and nobody told you what to do. I would go, well, you know, it's nice read. It's nice reading about Zen, but what do you do? And Philip Kaplow in that book tells you what to do.
Oh, you of course. That? It was an extremely important book that many people came to Zen Center and, of course, to Rochester to study with him and his different groups. Steve Tipton hung out in Cambridge with the Kaplow people there and sat with them, if you remember him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I did a Zoom talk with some of those people, 6 months ago or something.
Anyway, I got about 30 pages into the book, and I said, this is it. This is what I'm going to do.
Mm.
And this is what this is it. I'm convinced. And that's the same week I met Darlene.
Yeah, I've been waiting for that.
Right. A very auspicious week in my life. She worked as a waitress in this coffee shop, and that's how we met and got together and so on. So once I met her, I thought, you know what? I think Zen would be good for her too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had a feeling that it would. And because she was at loose ends in her life too, she said, she would complain, I just feel like there's this huge glass wall between me and the rest of the world, and I can't get to it no matter what I do, and it drives me crazy. And I said, well, let's do this.
Oh, hey, pause. So, Ferry. Okay. Hey, Ferry. Yeah. Anda tahu apa lakukan?
Mau buka pintu kamar mandi.
Iya, silakan, silakan. Istri di sini?
Kurang tahu, saya.
Yeah, well, you know, pukul di pintu.
Oh, iya. Yeah.
Okay. Dan nanti saya mau anda ke rumah Philip.
Oh, iya. Yeah.
Untuk lakukan, saya mau itu hadiah dari saya. So, waktu dia mau bayar, bilang, oh, sudah.
Oh.
Tetapi ada screening di sini. Itu satu waktu kecil. Okay?
Okay,
terima kasih. Yeah. Bye-bye. Yeah. All right.
God, David, you sound pretty good.
Basic stuff. I can do the basic. I can't talk about philosophy and stuff.
Right.
I was telling him, he said, I'm ready to put the new piece of plywood, you know, veneer on the bathroom door in our bedroom. I said, well, is my wife here? And he said, I don't know. I said, well, knock on the door. And I said, and Philip isn't home, and I want you to go over there and fix that thing for them as a gift for me. Tell them when they want to pay, tell them it's already paid. And labor costs here are a little different. He's a really good carpenter.
I bet.
He did some stuff yesterday, and good pay, $14 for a day.
Wow. Wow.
So, anyway, I don't see how people live in America. We'd just be, good Lord.
Well, a lot of people have a hard time.
I can't do it. You know, I just don't have enough coming in.
Well, I manage to live very frugally on Social Security, and I get a few bucks from the city and county for my homeless work. And if I'm careful, I'm okay, but I'm a lot better off than a lot of people.
Yeah, I don't get enough. Social Security, I get $168 a month after I pay the 100 a month, $105 a month for Medicare B, which I can't use. Use it unless you're in America,
right.
But you don't want to get rid of it. Anyway, go on. All right, you've met Darlene. Yeah. This is cool.
Right. So I talk her into Zen. So we decide to save our money. And then we had a copy, the first copy of the Whole Earth Catalog. And there's a letter in it from Peter Schneider to
Stuart Brand.
The guy who ran Whole Earth Catalog. Stuart Brand, right. And the letter was about, we do a lot of recycling here. And as an example, he gave the Oriokhi. You know, you dip the water
right.
from one bowl to the next bowl to the next. And I went, Tassajara. I remember Tassajara because when I used to hang out with the Grateful Dead, and they did a benefit. It was called the Zen
right.
Fit. And I said, I remember Tassajara. So I said to Darlene, let's go to Tassajara. And she said, okay, being an agreeable person. And so we wrote Peter Schneider a letter, and we wrote a nice hippie letter. We drew little flowers in the margins and everything, and said we want to come to Tassajara and practice Zen. And he wrote back, and he said, "Sure, come ahead." And he said, "Go to Zen Center first, but come ahead. You're more than welcome." So we worked for a year. In Cambridge, I stayed there with her. I did not go back to California, and I got a job as a drink maker in the coffee shop, and we made tons of money, David. I mean, there's so many rich kids in Cambridge. I mean, the tips, even by today's standards, were generous.
Wow, that's great.
So we saved up money. Yeah, and I was a good drink maker. I made really good stuff. And we saved up our money, and we went and we said, we ought to sit Zazen. That since we were still taking drugs, taking acid and mostly mescaline. I kept most of that mescaline for myself.
Oh, yeah.
So we went. So this is what happened. Our first Zazen experience was in January, it must have been 1970, and we went to Elsie Mitchell's
house. Oh, yeah.
And we went to Elsie Mitchell's house. We found out she had a little Zendo in her house.
Cambridge
on Battle Street.
Buddhist Association.
And, yeah, right. That's where we first sat for 40 minutes, and it almost killed us. It was so painful. And we went, oh, my God. And then we're walking home, and we meet another couple, and we're crossing a street, and it's snowing. And this kid comes by, and as he walks by Darlene, he slips his arm into her purse strap and steals it. And he's halfway across the street before she realizes it. And she goes, "Hey, he's stealing my purse." So I took off after him. And he goes running across Harvard Square, and he goes running down Mount Auburn Street, where the Kennedy Library is there now, but in those days it was a bus yard. And he goes running through the bus yard, and there's a bunch of these Irish guys around an oil drum with a fire in it, keeping warm. And they see this kid, this black kid, running by with a woman's purse, and then they see me running by. And these Irish guys really hated black people, boy. It was terrible in Boston.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember there were a lot of problems with racism in Boston.
Yeah, busing and all that. So anyway, the kid runs by with Darlene's purse. I run by after the kid, and then these Irish guys come running by after, you know, chasing both of us. And I get closer and closer, and I thought, shit, I'm going to catch this guy. And finally, I yell at him. I said, "Stop, just up. I said, give it back. And he stops, and he turns around, and he's so frightened. I, I, my, my heart went out to him, and he tossed me the purse, and I felt so sorry for him, and I pulled $5 up to get out of here before these guys show up. And he took off.
And, oh, that's neat. That's great.
Yeah, and that was our first experience with Zazen. So we did come out here. And then the next time we set Zazen was we stayed with friends up in Chico, and then we came down to the city to explore Zen Center, and Darlene went over to Zen Center and signed us up for a 5-day session. And she comes back and she says,
"Oh my God! Wait a minute!
I know.
You mean like you hadn't been sitting regularly or anything?"
We'd only sat one time about a year before.
And you signed up for a 5-day session.
Right. Well, she comes back all cheery and smiling and said, "I signed us up." She said, "It's really easy. You just sit twice, and then you have breakfast, and then you sit some during the day, and you got lunch." She said, "Nothing to it." But I knew different. And I went, "Oh my God." So we did it.
Wow.
We did it.
Wow.
And it was by the second period of the first day, she had tears streaming down her cheeks. She was in such pain. I felt worse. And it was so bad. And we were living in a VW bus, and it was parked across the street by that old Chinese lady's store. And we were sleeping in the bus because we didn't have enough money to sleep in the building. And the third night we go back to the bus, and I am just buzzing with energy and so relieved to not be sitting, to be moving around. And as Darlene gets in the bus, then as I get in the bus, these two kids walk up and they said, "We've got a gun. Give us your money." And I thought, oh, shit. So I opened my will. I had some traveler's checks, and I had a little bit of cash. So I gave them the cash, and they took it, and they walked away. And I don't know what my mind was, but I put my hands in my pockets, and I felt a quarter. And I yelled at them. I said, "Hey," and they turned around, and I flipped the quarter at them. And they couldn't quite believe that. And they sort of stared at me, and I stared at them, and then they turned around and walked away. So we told somebody at Zen Center the next day, and they said, "Well, we'll put you in the building and not charge you."
Huh.
And somewhere along the line, our first morning of Zazen, someone told someone, "These guys need... that have never had Zazen instruction." So Bill Kwong gave us Zazen instruction.
So this is like the fourth day?
No, the first day.
Oh, the first
the
day.
I think some of the powers that be saw we were in such distress that we needed help.
Yeah.
So Bill Kwong gave us Zazen instruction that morning. And we set the next 5 days. And here we are doing it today.
I've got stuff on Cuke.com from you. Did you have any? Do you have any memories of Suzuki Roshi?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a Suzuki Roshi story. This is when we were, it must have been before we set the session or slightly after. We went to Zen Center and we got in the door as the evening service was starting. And we're walking down the hallway and Suzuki Roshi is coming down the stairs to do the service. And he had his attendant, Jisha. Is it the
Jisha. Jijian.
Right. Yeah. Who we later met as Stan Welch. And there we were. I was with my long blonde hair and a ponytail and a fringe jacket and cowboy boots, and Darlene is in some sort of see-through outfit with her long black hair. And he sees us, and he puts out this incredibly beautiful, wide smile. It was a smile like, where have you been? And then he bowed. He bowed all the way down to his knees, and he stayed there. And we bowed back, and then finally, he rose back up and went on into the Zendo. And that was it. That cemented the deal for us.
Mm.
And Dan Welch told later that he was blown away by that interaction. He said, "I'd never seen anything like that before."
Yeah, yeah. No, that's quite unusual. I can't think of anything quite like that. But
yeah.
One thing it does have in common with many, many, many stories is he tended to do something with people the first time he met them to sort of greet them, make them feel noticed, seen. A lot of times it would be in the Zendo, he'd just be touching them.
Uh-huh. Well, he did it with... I mean, it just... For both of us, it was like... That experience is what committed us to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. And then I think we were living in Chico at the time. We were living in Chico that year, and we would hitchhike down for sessions. They had them every other month in those days, 5 days, seven.
What about your bus?
Oh, it belonged to a friend, and he had lent it to us.
Uh-huh.
And we were we had to give it back to him.
Oh yeah, I see.
I can't believe we hitchhiked all those miles, but we did.
That's a long way.
Yeah,
that's like a drive. It's like an hour and a half, huh?
No, it's more like 3 hours.
Oh, is that right? 3 hours from San Francisco to Chico.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's about 180 miles.
Yeah, I used to go there and get walnut from the gunstock factories. I'd get stuff they couldn't use, and I made tables out of it and table legs out of the, the gunstocks. And yeah, that's my memory of Chico.
Yeah, we used to have friends who would go to the walnut orchards, and when they would take down the old trees, they would haul them away for free from the ranchers and get this great wood to do things with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's where the walnut tables at Greens come from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we're living in Chico, hitchhiking down for sessions, and we realized we'd have to go back to the city and move in next to Zen Center. And that summer of 1971, we moved out of Chico, up onto some land, friend-zoned in the foothills, and lived under a tree for about 4 or 5 months. And then we decided, well, we got to go. We got to go to...
Wait, you lived under a tree?
Yeah. Yeah, alongside this beautiful little creek with a little...
So you were living under a tree. Wait, tell.
I know. Yeah, me and Darlene and Dylan, our dog, for a number of months.
Oh, my God, Dylan. Oh, I remember Dylan. That's like a collie?
Yeah. Yeah, Dylan.
Yeah.
A very bodhisattva dog.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I could tell you stories about Dylan, too. Once BR gave a whole lecture about how Dylan was a great bodhisattva who had been a great Zen master in the past and was just taking time out
sweet.
This lifetime.
That's
yeah.
We left
paradise. We left the land.
Oh, wait a minute. The town of paradise?
No, paradise as in living. It was so easy.
Oh, because there is a town named Paradise not far from there that where Clay right. was living with Rita, and they moved out right before it was completely destroyed by fire. I mean, just totally.
It was. Yeah, a couple years ago.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, that was not too far from where we were living.
Yeah.
But then we went to the city. We got a room at 276 Page with a bunch of other Zennies. I think we're the only two left of that bunch. And got jobs. And
when you say the only two left, do you mean on the planet Earth?
No, at Zen Center. I don't know about the planet Earth.
Yeah.
It was a big apartment. There was like 8 or 10 of us in there. And anyway, we got jobs, and it was about the time that Baker Broshi came back from Japan. Oh, I forgot. The very first time we walked into Zen Center, we came in with our dog and said, "We've come here. We've been saving our money. We've come across the country from Cambridge. We want to go to Tassajara." And Loring Palmer was the director, and he turned around and he said, "You can't practice Zen and own a dog."
Oh, Loring, shame on you.
I know. What are you talking about? I was so angry. I said, "Well, then, screw you." And Darlene broke into tears, and we left. And I said, you know.
That's funny, because Loring was the sweetest, most accepting person.
Right.
You know? Yeah, it's so unusual to hear about him.
Yeah, that's what he said, the words out of his mouth. You can't practice Zen and have a dog. And so we left, and Darlene in tears, to go back to Chico. And I said, why don't we form our own Zen Center? If these people did it, we can do it. You know, we'll get some little Japanese guy to come over and be our teacher. And Darlene said, okay, let's figure out how to do it. So we spread the word around our friends that we were fundraising to buy land in Chico to start a Zen Center. And believe it or not, we raised $50,000.
What?
And then I thought, yeah, we had some wealthy friends, and they put their money in. And I said, now how are we going to get a Zen teacher? And we decided we would put an ad in the Chico paper. So we put an ad in the Chico paper, wanted Zen teacher. And one night we're having supper. This is when we're still living in Chico. And this guy shows up at the door. And he's got a cigar in his mouth. And he's got this 15 or 16-year-old girlfriend with him who's popping bubble gum, and he says, "Hey, I'm your Zen teacher." And he said, and we said, "Oh yeah, well, come in and have supper with us." And he was a total bullshitter, of course, and we knew it. And he said, "First of all, forget all that meditation stuff, you know." And then he went on his spiel because he smelled money, and but we rejected him.
That's funny. Wow.
Anyway, we had many, as young Zen students, we had many adventures.
Well, wait a minute. What happened to this $50,000?
Oh, as we became more and more connected to Zen Center, we gave up on that idea.
Well, what did you do with the 50,000? You mean it was just 50,000 committed?
Right.
And you told them, never mind.
Right, never mind, we're going to Zen Center.
Now, but wait, there's an element missing here. Why did you go back to Zen Center after you knew that they were anti-dog?
Because Baker Roshi was back, and when we went down...
Back from where?
from Japan. Remember, he was in Japan and he came back in 1971, I think.
Wait a minute. You met Suzuki coming down the stairs. By the time Dick came back from Japan, Suzuki wasn't coming down the stairs.
Oh, I met him. No, we met him long before. We met him the year before. We met Suzuki Roshi the year before.
Oh.
When he was still active.
So after that, you let Loring discourage you from coming back after you'd met Suzuki.
No. I didn't tell it to you chronologically. The very first thing that happened was meeting Loring Palmer. Our very first experience with Sin Center was going in the door. Right. And then we kept coming back. And then
what made you come back to be able to meet Suzuki after that anti-dog experience with Loring, this heartless, uptight group?
We felt it was a uptight group, but we wanted to practice Zen, and we wanted to go to Tassajara, and that was, and we were figuring out, well, whatever obstacles we have, this is what we're going to do.
Oh, okay. So you came back,
yeah,
and you met Suzuki, and then you were hitchhiking in for Sesshins.
We set a number of sashis with Suzuki Roshi.
Uh-huh. And then, but you didn't move there until Dick came back.
Right. About the same time, probably.
Well, that was, right. I think he didn't come back till late September or October of 71.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's about the time we moved down from Chico to the city, and we figured dog or we figured dog or no, you know, we're going to go to Tassajara no matter what.
And
Dylan and Darlene would meet Baker Roshi on the sidewalk, and Baker Roshi loved Dylan, so we asked him, we want to go to Tassajara, can we take our dog? And he said, yes, of course. So that took care of that problem. And we did take Dylan, as you know, to Tassajara and to Green Gulch and wherever we went.
Let me tell you, you had special treatment. You know, one thing is, Tassajara had a dog and had a one-dog policy, but Noah disappeared, you know, 1970 or something.
He disappeared while we were there because he and Dylan became great pals.
Noah didn't disappear until later. Oh, okay.
We went there in the fall of 72, and Noah was there, and I think it was the next summer he and Dylan took off one day, and they disappeared for a couple of days. And we thought, oh, shit, you know, just something terrible happened. And then the third day, we hear Dylan wailing down on Grasshopper Flats, and he comes running into the main area, and he's like skin and bones and covered with ticks and burrs, and there was no Noah, and Noah was never seen again. And we
That's not true. I found Noah.
I know you did. I know you did. But at the time, we thought he was gone for good.
He never came back to live. He stayed in Fred's camp. Over there by Royal Seco River. And I guess I was working on the phone line when I was back as head monk or director, 74, 75. And I saw Noah. Amazing. Anyway, Yeah. Wow, that I appreciate that. That adds to the Noah story. I'm making a note here. Noah.
Yeah, we thought I didn't know until actually just a few years ago, probably looking on your website, that Noah had survived. I have thought all these years that a mountain lion got him.
Yeah. We don't know quite how he got to Fred's camp. That's a long way. But, you know, I had walked with Noah all the way over to Arroyo Seco, and probably other people had, and maybe ran into somebody there when he was by himself and took him home. Because Noah loved people.
Yeah.
Loved people and dogs, and would try to kill anything else.
Yep. Anyway, that's the beginning of our Zen trip, David.
Wow. And then you continued with Richard Baker.
Yep.
And for how long?
Up until you left.
And where were you then?
Living across the street in 307 Page.
Oh, yeah, I remember that apartment. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember watching a Super Bowl there with you with some other people, and you and I are the only two left from that.
Right.
There was Jerry Fuller. I don't remember who else.
I remember watching the Dallas 49er playoff game that got him into the Super Bowl with Terry Gregg, Michael Wynn, and Bill Lane.
Yeah.
All of whom are gone now.
Right. Maybe that was where I was with you, or maybe it was another. Terry Gregg and Bill Lane. Yeah, that was neat. I loved going up to visit you there.
Okay.
Yeah. So after Baker left Zen Center in 1983, you still stayed there, right?
Yeah, and Darlene was, I was working jobs as an aunt. Darlene was pretty much involved in Zen Center. I think she was the head of the office. I think she was on the board. She was the secretary. She was doing various things.
Right.
And
who ordained her as?
Michael Wenger.
Oh, Michael Wenger ordained her.
Uh-huh.
And you got ordained as priest too, right?
I did.
By?
Blanche.
Oh, yeah, right.
Right.
Right. And when did you all found the Guerneville Zendo? I mean, I was around then. I mean, I remember when it happened. I just don't remember when. I remember it happening. I don't remember when.
Right, 2002.
That's what I was thinking about 20 years ago.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. In Guerneville.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, it's still hanging on there.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'd like to call you back another time and talk about some of the work you did with homeless and various troubled people in the Tenderloin. You had a really difficult job. And then you did some private eye work. Were you working with Tank Thompson or somebody else?
No. Oh, it was with a former Sarah. I didn't last very long. I worked with a former San Francisco cop named Costello.
Oh, yeah.
I forget.
Well, I want to call you back and talk about that stuff and some other things.
Okay.
But, yeah, I think that's pretty good for today.
Yeah, I think so. It's good talking to you.
Yeah. Well,
I hope I didn't.
Hope you didn't. You fascinating for me. I loved it. I loved, and I learned some things. I mean, I loved the Suzuki story. I like a lot of it. I like you.
Good.
You meeting. I liked it all, but I'm just thinking of some highlights. You meeting Darlene and reading Three Pillars of Zen in the same week in Cambridge. That's cool. Cambridge, right?
Right. The biggest week. One of the biggest weeks of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was something else you said that was pretty, that was quite a coincidence. Oh, the woman coming up, the voice saying, "Don't use needles." That's good. Yeah, I never did that. I had a rule against that. But I didn't like that stuff anyway.
No.
I didn't like opium. You know.
No.
Every once in a while, somebody'd have some opium. It'd make me sick of my stomach, and I don't know, made me feel a little dizzy and stuff. But I have known enough people who had problems with opiates to know you think you don't like it, but at some point you can.
I was so afraid that if I ever took it even once, that I would be gone.
Yeah.
And I did, and in those days, people were beginning to use it, and I lost a couple of friends to it, and I thought, no, thank you.
Yeah, I did such a long podcast with Jeannie DePrima. I divided it into two, and she tells about her first time she took heroin, and she said it was just, she'd had so much trouble and so much trauma and everything, and you know, there have been some studies of heroin at Harvard that showed that how much people liked it was in direct proportion to how miserable they were. She said it was the most wonderful experience in the world. And then she spent years and years trying to recreate it.
Right. That's what happens.
Yeah.
I've known so many. People die of that stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful. I appreciate it. I'm gonna get this. I go through this, and I won't take much of anything out. There wasn't anything said that was X-rated or that. I take out if somebody starts saying something that's embarrassing about somebody else, I'll take that out.
Right.
Unless I don't like them. No, kidding.
hey, David.
And I'll have it on. I'll send you a link. I'll have it on Cuke Audio Podbean, at least by Sunday, your Sunday.
Oh, well. Okay, it's easy to find on your website.
Yeah, well, see, you know that. All right.
Right.
And then, you probably have to go to Podbean to get it because it doesn't get listed on the list of guests until Peter Ford puts it there. I have an associate I work with that does a lot of the work on Cuke.com and Junior Suzuki.com. And without him, I would be lost. It would return to be like a ramshackle shack.
Right. Well, it was wonderful talking to you. And my very best to you and Katrinka.
Yeah.
I think you guys all, I do think of you.
Yeah, well, we think of you too. And I hear about you from Andrew and Dennis. How long has it been since you've seen Dennis?
I saw Dennis a couple weeks ago.
Oh, that's wonderful. I did a podcast with him a week ago.
Oh, good. Yeah, we stay in touch.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's wonderful. Okay. Well, very good. Okay. Say hi to Ethan. You already did, I think, or you will.
Yeah, I will.
And great. Take care. And
you too.
But we'll get back together with you soon. All right?
Okay.
All right.
Yes. Take care. Thanks
a lot. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So thanks a lot, Tony. That's great. Like I say, toward the end, I'm going to call him back and get more from him about his social work and whatever. He has a lot of good stories. You might have an inkling of it from that. And I've got some on kook.com. Just go to the site search box on the homepage and write Tony Patchell or just Patchell. You can probably get him by just writing Tony. Write any of those things, and you'll get to his page. And I have a few things, pieces he's written about experiences he's had in social work or whatever. It's been up there a long time. Maybe I'll review it. Okay. So this has been a Kuke audio podcast. I'm DC Pooba of Kuke Audio and Kuke Archives, coming to you from Sleepy Sanur with Doggy Bandita, Feline Cuchita, and dear lovely Katrinka. And we're wishing you and yours and all of us a grand awakening.